Last week, North Carolina's legislature passed a sweeping 57-page bill that, among other things, will leave 318,000 registered North Carolinians without the capacity to vote. Ari Berman, a contributing writer for The Nation and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute, says that the bill, if signed into law, will eliminate practically everything that encourages people to vote, and he calls it the country's worst voter suppression law. He joins us now to talk about North Carolina's bill and similar voter legislation around the country. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me back, Leonard.
Now, North Carolina has passed a slew of conservative legislation lately. They blocked Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, made cuts to public education funding and to corporate tax rates, even have a bill that makes it legal to carry a gun into a bar and to play into a playground. What's going on there?
Well, it's really been the most extreme legislative session that I can remember in a very long time.
But North Carolina has always been one of those swing states in the South.
It's always been a very moderate to progressive southern state. But what happened in 2010 is Republicans took over the state legislature for the first time in 100 years. And then they took over the governor's office in 2012. So Republicans have control of North Carolina state government for the first time in a century. And remember, a century ago, they were progressive Republicans. So really, we've never seen this kind of Republican control in North Carolina. And they've really looked to Jesse Helms as their model in terms of the type of legislation they're passing. They're trying to take the state in a very right-wing direction and turn what had been an increasingly purple state into a very red state instead.
And is this voter ID bill part of that program?
Oh, absolutely. Because what they did is they passed all these extreme policies that you mentioned earlier, and they made it harder for their political opponents to challenge those policies at the ballot box. And so you have a strict voter ID law, you have cuts to early voting, you have an end to same-day voter registration during the early voting period, you have the elimination of pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, you have an end on straight ticket voting. I mean, all of these were things that the Obama campaign used so successfully to win North Carolina, surprisingly, in 2008, and to compete so successfully again in 2012. And so the idea is that make it harder for young people, women, minorities, poor segments of the population to cast a ballot. Those are people that are more likely to vote for Democratic candidates.
Are people who already have been registered also likely to lose that right?
Well, if you look at the numbers, the state's own numbers in terms of who doesn't have state-issued ID, 318,000 registered voters don't have this form of state-issued ID. 138,000 of them voted in the last election. So at the very least, we have 138,000 people that voted that won't be able to vote now because they don't have the right ID. Then you have, for example, in the first week of early voting, 900,000 North Carolinians voted during that week that's been cut off. So you have the difficulty of people being able to vote, and then you have less opportunities for them to vote.
Of course, some of those 900,000 people voted for Republicans. Are they at all worried that they're going to alienate a large section of the voting public by doing this sort of thing?
Well, they've already alienated a very large segment of the voting population. The approval rating of the legislature is at 20%. So they're about as unpopular as the Congress nationally right now. They're gone until May of 2014. And so their numbers are unlikely to rise as a result. What is happening in terms of the state is...
But they're gone? You mean they take a long recess?
They take a very long recess.
Until next year.
They did all this stuff and then they got out of town as quickly as possible. The governor's still around and his approval rating is underwater for the first time as well. One of the things in the voter ID bill that they did that was very interesting is they allowed anyone who's over 70 to use the ID they had, even if it's expired. So that was a way to allow older, more conservative voters who don't have the right ID to vote, but they also banned student IDs at the same time. So they're making it easier for older people to vote and harder for younger people to cast a ballot.
Also, there are other states that have done voter ID. And you noted in a tweet that under Texas's voter ID law, you can vote with a gun permit. That's valid ID, but not a student ID.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's pretty transparent why they're doing that. I mean, if you look at the demographics of who's going to vote which way, and I want to say with regards to Texas, Texas is a very interesting example of this post-Voting Rights Act landscape that we're in because Texas has passed both a voter ID law and a redistricting map series of redistricting maps that have been found to be discriminatory in the federal courts last year. And now the question is, without Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which would have forced Texas to clear changes with the federal government, what's going to happen with these voting changes? Is the voter ID law going to go in effect right away? That's why the Justice Department has said that Texas needs to clear its voting changes because the courts found that its redistricting maps were implemented with intentional discrimination.
How many states have passed new voting laws in the aftermath of the Supreme Court decision, Shelby County versus Holder?
Six southern states have either passed new laws or said they're going to implement existing laws that they otherwise would have had to pre-clear with the federal government.
But also Pennsylvania. The closing arguments will be heard today in a Pennsylvania court over a voter ID bill that opponents claim will disenfranchise up to 500,000 voters.
Yeah, there was a new study that came out that said that 500,000 people don't have state-issued photo ID in Pennsylvania. That law was initially passed last year, and a lot of people, hundreds of thousands of people, didn't have the ID, and only a very small number of them were able to get that ID before the law was subsequently blocked. I think Pennsylvania is in need for why Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act should be expanded, because voting discrimination has spread from the South to the North, but the Supreme Court, I think, took the exact opposite view, which is that voting discrimination is a thing of the past.
Do most of these voting bills look alike?
Yeah, they look very similar. I mean, what's happening now is they're getting more and more extreme. So you had a situation where North Carolina's voter ID law, for example, allowed some forms of student identification originally when it was introduced in April. Then what happened is the bill got tougher. They cut out student IDs. Then they added all these other elements, right? Cutting early voting, eliminating same-day registration, and all these other things that are in this 57-page bill. If Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act were still around, I'm pretty confident North Carolina wouldn't have added all these provisions because they would have had to clear them with the Justice Department.
Well, some members of Congress, including Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, suggest that Sections 2 and 3 of the Voting Rights Act would adequately cover the Sections 4 and 5 that the Supreme Court struck down.
I just don't think that's going to be the case. First thing, Section 2, which applies nationwide, to challenge those laws, you have to challenge them after the fact. The legal process is very expensive. It takes a long time. People are disenfranchised. In the meantime, Section 5 was preventative. So it's completely different than Section 2. And it's funny, you mentioned Section 3 of the Voting Rights Act, which allows states who have a finding of intentional discrimination to be bailed into the act. Once the Justice Department decided to use Section 3 to challenge Texas's redistricting maps, all these people cried foul and said, how dare the Justice Department use Section 3? So you have the same people arguing that the Justice Department has Section 2 and 3 who then criticize them when they actually use it.
My guest is Ari Berman, a contributing writer for The Nation, investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Yesterday in a USA Today opinion piece, former House Judiciary Committee Chair James Sensenbrenner called the Supreme Court decision a historic opportunity to revise Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act. In what ways is he suggesting? What does he say we should be doing?
He hasn't mentioned any specifics yet. Jim Sensenbrenner was chair of the House Judiciary Committee back in 2006 when Congress overwhelmingly reauthorized the act. I was in D.C. then. I don't remember that period as a bipartisan utopia, but increasingly it seems to be that way if you look at how that legislation passed. Sensenbrenner said in another interview with Roll Call that a number of Republicans are on board with this, but they don't want to be named. So that's very interesting.
That's because they're up for they're going to have to face opponents in primaries, and they do not want to face Tea Party opponents.
Absolutely. And the Voting Rights Act has become a wedge issue now in a way that it hadn't been in years past when there was this bipartisan consensus in Congress. So it's very interesting if indeed there is a silent majority for renewing the Voting Rights Act. It'll be interesting to see if there will be future hearings and if those people will start to be make their voices heard, because right now, based on the congressional hearings we had recently, there's not a lot of hope for renewing the VRA.
The Associated Press reports that the North Carolina legislation was intended to prevent voter fraud, both rampant and undetected. Has voter fraud been an issue in North Carolina?
It really hasn't been. There has only been about 20 cases in the past decade, and there's been no cases of voter impersonation that a voter ID law would stop. So when the Republicans who passed this proposal talk about it, they talk about it in these very theoretical ways, like it'll make people more, quote unquote, comfortable with the electoral process. But I think the irony of all these laws is that it's making people a lot less comfortable with the integrity of the electoral process. People feel like they're unnecessarily losing their right to vote.
Well, as you point out, it'll eliminate same-day voter registration, shorten early voting periods, terminate early voter registration for teens ahead of their 18th birthdays. It also has eliminated online voting registration as an option. You have to mail in a form, a paper form, that has to be delivered in person or at least 25 days before the election day. But one of the odder clauses, it will allow more people to challenge the registration qualifications of other voters. How does that work? And what grounds would they be using?
So there's this Tea Party group called True the Vote that was active in the last election that basically claimed that people were voting ineligibly and that they had to then station all these poll watchers to challenge the validity of prospective voters. This was a controversial thing. It didn't really end up happening in 2012, but they're back now. And I think this could very possibly lead to racial profiling at the polls.
The NAACP and other groups, along with the U.S. Justice Department, have threatened to file federal lawsuits in an effort to overturn the North Carolina bill. In light of the Supreme Court civil rights, the Voting Rights Act decision, do you think that they'll have a case?
They'll have a case at least against some parts of the legislation. I mean, you look at, for example, the disparate racial impact. African Americans are 23% of registered voters in the state, but there are a much higher percentage of those without IDs, those who used early voting, those who used same-day registration. So there's clearly grounds to challenge this. The question is, what will they do? Will they get preliminary injunctions? Will they challenge it under Section 2, in which case they'll have to compile a lot of evidence that this is discriminatory? It's a lot harder now without the Voting Rights, without Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Not impossible, but just tougher.
It's not like in New York where once you have registered, you just show up and your signature has to match your signature from the past, the last time?
No, I mean, you're going to have this specific form of state-issued ID. And as I mentioned earlier, you can't use a student ID. You can't use a public employee ID. So, for example, if you're a student from Indiana and you're going to school in North Carolina, you're probably not going to be able to vote now in that state. And then there's just other people who aren't going to have the ID. And the question is, are those people who are going to be able to get to a DMV office, are the DMV offices going to be open long enough hours for people to be able to get the ID? Is it going to be accessible? This is one of the things we've seen in states like Texas and Pennsylvania is it's not just a problem that people don't have the ID, it's that they can't get the ID once they know they need it.
Governor Pat McCrory says he's going to sign the bill even though he hasn't read it all.
Well, I think North Carolina politics has been very strange. I mean, you look, for example, there was a bill to ban Sharia law that became an abortion restrictions bill, which later turned up as a motorcycle safety bill that became an abortion restriction bill. And so things haven't been done in a very transparent manner down there. And the fact that McCrory hadn't read the whole bill, it's only 57 pages. It's not like this is a 1,000-page law passed by Congress. And he says he's still going to sign it, I think is very illuminating of the fact that he's not really in control of the state, that the legislature down there is leading the charge, the Tea Party's in control, and McCrory doesn't want to do anything to upset the Tea Party base of that state.
Representative John Lewis said in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing last week that the Voting Rights Act is needed more now than ever before. Did he give reasons?
Well, I think if you just look at the backdrop, after Obama's election, attacks on voting rights were drastically expanded. You had 180 different bills introduced in 41 states to restrict access to the ballot. So even before this latest Supreme Court decision, voter suppression was all too rampant. And that's why people like John Lewis, who lived this history, who almost died marching for voting rights, are so disturbed by what's happened in the past few years and believe that the Supreme Court decision is going to be so radical coming on the heels of all these other voter suppression attempts.
Is there a sense that the U.S. Congress is willing to restore any of the things that were lost in the Voting Rights Act?
there's no sense yet. I mean, we talked earlier about possibly Jim Sensenbrenner has a bunch of Republicans in his pocket who he's not mentioning right now. But it's tough to get bipartisan agreement on anything, as we're seeing with immigration reform and the economy. This has become, unfortunately, a divisive issue. I mean, I think really what should be one of the most settled rights in a democracy, the right to vote, is instead one of the most contested.
Have people been protesting? What are Moral Mondays?
There's been a very, very interesting protest movement in North Carolina led by the NAACP down there and joined by a lot of different groups. It is a multi-issue, multi-racial movement focused on social justice. They have been protesting outside of the legislature every Monday. They've been going inside and getting arrested in nonviolent civil disobedience. So they've really been taking a page from the civil rights movement. Many people who are active in the civil rights movement have joined those protests. And so it's a way for people who oppose what's going on in the legislature to get involved. Now that the legislature is out of session, they're going to take this on the road. They're going to go to all 13 congressional districts. And I think the goal is to get more people who are disaffected from the political process, angry about what's happening, involved in some sort of meaningful way.
And then it'll go to the courts.
It'll go to the courts and it'll go to elections. I mean, I think one of the big goals in North Carolina is to try to flip the state legislature in 2014. It's going to be a lot harder because they control the redistricting map. So they've drawn the maps in such a way that has really aggressively gerrymandered the state. So it's harder to pick up those seats. But the idea is you fight it in the courts, you fight it at the ballot box, and you fight it in the streets.
Ari Berman is a contributing writer for The Nation and an investigative journalism fellow at The Nation Institute. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you for having me back.